David Adair with us. We're going to take your calls, talk to him a little bit about rocketry and so much more when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. David Adair with us. We'll get to your calls, too, as we're talking about the EMPs and CMEs, coronal mass ejection. That's from the sun. We don't have any control over that. David, I want to get touch your brain a little bit about the rocket science and propulsion. Will we ever get to the point where we can travel at the speed of light?
Not in our lifetime, but yeah, you will. I think you'll be able to. There are ways of getting around that speed barrier. And if we're not blown up by a CME or an EMP and we don't kill ourselves, we'll eventually get to a point where we will be able to do transdimensional jumping drive engines, or there's a number of ways of transferring and transgressing through barriers. It's just a matter of time and what you really need is an infrastructure built. And right now, we're going nowhere because we don't even have a manned space program anymore.
No. Now, what about privatization, though? Are they going to excel and go beyond anything we've even done with NASA?
Well, have you seen anything flying? No.
Well, not really.
Not really. And there's the answer. Let me tell you what. Let me give you the straight story on it. I know there's everybody's saying the alternative space program. Well, there may be one there, but I haven't seen it. Until I see it and touch it, I can't tell you there's one there. Although I have to admit, there's a lot of suspicion there might be something up with that. But what in 3D real world with NASA, what they've done is that the aerospace, and I know these people, the aerospace giants, it's been my bread and butter for four decades.
Yes, they have.
What they do is they've let you, the U.S. taxpayer, step out on the R&D limb, research and development, and you guys, the taxpayers, would take the risks on all these space vehicles. Meanwhile, they subcontract and make money. Now, you know, you've done away with the space program, you put the shuttles in mothballs in museums, you got a $150 billion platform up there called the ISS, and the only way you can get to it is whatever mood the Putin's in. Last time he got mad, he told us to use a trampoline to get to the ISS. So anyway, you mothballed your fleet when there was two-thirds of its life left. That's insane. And you got no replacements. The aerospace giants are not going to pull their checkbooks out and build vehicles and start flying. It ain't going to happen, y'all. No, the taxpayer's been carrying it since 1958. And you think it was going to just happen overnight? Yeah, I know you got Elon Musk and you got some of these other people, billionaire, I think, Branson. But you don't see anything coming together in substantial fleet form like we had, and we just killed it off. So now we're sitting here for the second time in my life. We have no manned space program, and there's nothing on the horizon to replace it right now. The most that they're doing is what? Building resupply ships for the ISS. That's going commercial-wise, SpaceX. But, you know, people thought there were going to be a shuttle fleet to replace the shuttle fleet immediately. Ain't going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
There's no way those aerospace giants are going to pull their checkbooks out and take that risk. They let you, the taxpayers, been doing it. And when I saw that they were retiring the shuttle fleet, I knew right then, that's the end of the space program, y'all. Unless you get up and raise enough ruckus, you know, and you can get your space program back, you ain't going to have one.
Yeah, aren't they supposed to have new craft to replace old craft so it's an easy transition?
Yeah, where are they?
I know, we never had it, did we?
No.
What about anti-gravity propulsion, David? Is that possible?
It's like faster than light speed travel. It's out there in that technological mist that we can't get to right now. At least three-dimensional science can't. I would hate, God, I hate to think that they've got running an alternative space program that looks like a cross between Star Wars and Star Trek.
Yeah, and we don't even know about it. Some people say they do.
I know. You wouldn't want me in a room with them. I'll murder all of them.
Well, don't say that. We don't want you in jail for murder, David.
Well, I mean, for God's sake, holding that kind of technology back from all of us when you, the taxpayer, has been carrying the brunt for about 60 years, and that's how you get treated? Man, that is so not right.
But you're saying it's conceivable.
Yeah, I think it is. I wasn't at first, but I've been watching patterns and trends in the 3D real world, and it's doing things that just don't make no sense unless you really do have an alternative.
That's a good point. Let's go to the phones for you. David in Tampa, Florida, welcome to the show. David, go ahead.
George, David, it's an honor to talk to both of you.
Thank you, David.
Big fans of mine for years, and I'd like to get David's opinion. My grandfather controlled the power grid for Northern New York for over 40 years, and I'd like to find out David's opinion, and if the CMP or EMP were to hit the U.S., what it would do to the hydroelectric as well as the nuclear power plants.
Oh, everything goes, because with the power plants, if those generators go that keep the coolant and keep those cores cool, we're screwed. And that's what's going to happen. It's going to be worse than Fukushima. David?
Well, also, you will have no way of transmitting the power downrange. All your lines are cooked. All the sub-transformers, substations, they're all burnt. There's no way let's say you had a geothermal plant. Well, that's fine. It may still be running, but it's not going to send power off the property because distribution lines are gone.
And the transformers, we don't have enough to replace the ones that would get burned out.
You don't have enough. You don't have any. There are zero spares.
And I'm told they're made in China. Is that true?
That is true. I checked that out. I even talked to them in China. There are 300 high-energy transformers you're referring to. You don't see these. You have to drive to the substation.
Right. They're not by us.
No, they're distribution stations. They're huge. They're big as a house. But when one of them blows, you put in an order to China in about 1.5 to 2 years, you get the transformer.
And by then, 90% of the people have died.
Yeah. Now, the SHIELD Act, they've got that addressed. That's a several billion-dollar business sitting there. So what you do, sorry, China, tough. I'm not going to order anything from you. We will build a transformer manufacturing plant in the middle of the country, dead center geographically. Now think of all the jobs there. And then we build our own transformers and we ship them to the sites where the transformers are sitting, and these all would be spares. You put them on the Faraday cage net, shed, and that's the first thing you start with the SHIELD Act, is start building the spares. And then start hardening the grid.
Smart. Robert in Phoenix, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Robert.
Mr. Dare, I agree with you 100%. This has been bugging me for 20 years. I'll tell you why. My father was a winder for Eastern Electric.
Uh-huh.
When he passed away, the last five winders who were at the funeral were in their 60s and 70s. There are no men to repair the transformers.
No, they're gone.
They're gone. It's a lost art. In fact, his last transformer that he helped design used mineral oil to cool it.
Well, in the SHIELD Act, I'd bring that art back to full swing, hire people. Humans can still learn. You teach them that art, and you have your own transformer manufacturing system in the heart of the country.
We have the capability, David, and the smarts to get this done and get it fixed awfully fast, don't we?
Yeah. If the SHIELD Act's passed, I've read through it three times now. I've talked to enough people. Once Trump signs it into law and the money comes out of DOE, $10 billion, and we don't need $10 billion every year, y'all, just a one-time shot. And then what it would cost to maintain the systems forever, 20 cents a citizen. A voting citizen.
Not bad. That's a good return.
20 cents a year, a month. I think y'all can afford that.
Let's go to Vance in Columbus, Ohio, first-time caller. Vance, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, George, it's an honor to speak with you finally.
Thank you.
Long-time listener. It's a great show tonight, by the way, and one of my recent favorites is yours with William Forstchen.
Yep.
And he talked about EMPs a lot, and tonight I'm hearing CMEs was just wondering what's exactly the difference.
You know, all right, CME, and I'm going to have you jump in here too, David, but a CME is called a coronal mass ejection. It's a burst from the sun, and an EMP is an electromagnetic pulse, which is created when a nuke is detonated in the atmosphere. Want to add to these, David?
You're right on target. A real oversimplified way, but an easy way to remember it, is a CME comes from the sun, and an EMP comes from man. And that's the difference.
And both could be destructive.
Both are just about equally destructive. The real difference is the EMP will do more damage on electronics than the CME will.
Right. Now, we've been hit by CMEs. We get hit by CMEs a lot over the course of a year, but we've been lucky that they've been small. When they get into the X size, then they're big enough to take down the grid, like the Carentan event in the 1800s. Thank God all we had was the telegraph system going at the time. And I understand also railroad ties got fried, David. Remember?
Yeah, the reason why the telegraphs ran right along the railroad lines. And what happened was they would often ground cables to the railroad lines. So when that thing hit, it just backtracked up through the system, and it really heated up the rails. But fortunately, the rails were really heavy, and they could take it. But that's what will take out our transformers, that same E1 wave when it comes through.
Months ago, when I was back in St. Louis, I was going to a pharmacy, and their power was out, David. But they were still open. And I walked in there, and, you know, there was about 15 customers in line, and the guy's trying to do everything by hand. They can't take credit cards because the power's out. The lights are out. And the manager of the store said, you know what, I got to close this. It's just not going to work.
Right.
And it's just without electrical power, everything goes down the creek. I mean, companies like Amazon.com, power goes out, they're out of business. They're gone.
Gone.
I mean, that's when people would say, gosh, I wish the bricks and mortar stores were still around, because Amazon's gone. Your cell phones won't work. Those are gone. And most people are getting away from landlines, the old landline phones.
Yeah.
And so they're not going to have any backup systems.
Yeah. You know what they're doing with that landline system? If they get rid of it, you remember, George, yeah, we're a little older than most, but when we were young, Ma Bell was a reigning absolute monopoly.
Yep. They broke them up.
Well, they're going to do it again. They're going to take away the landlines, and then they'll have control of the mobile phones. And they're moving to another monopoly. It's just a matter of time. I knew they would do that.
Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the program, Joseph.
Hey, George. How are you?
Wonderful.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask David, now, concerning launches to Mars, what size engine and what type engine would have to be used for such a mission? And what fuel would be used? And could you possibly fit a return trip off that rocket with a big enough engine?
Excellent question. Unfortunately, it'll take me longer than there's their time on the show to answer that one. I'll try to make it condensed. A lot will depend on mission, how many people you got, what are you going to take. See, that's the problem going to Mars. It's so dang far away. You know, the moon's only 247,000 miles, depending on orbit. But Mars, man, you're looking round trips, you know, over 80 million miles. And the problem with that is you'll have to take all your water, your food with you, unless you go down the path that, I can't remember his name, Mars Direct, where you would send ships ahead of...
Robert Zubrin,
yeah. Bob's got the neatest voice. But anyway, you would send ships ahead that would use the atmosphere on Mars to generate its own fuel, and when it's completely full, it'd send a signal back to you saying, I'm ready. And then you'd launch your people to Mars. But no matter what you're looking at, just to go to Mars, you're looking at a price tag of $500 billion. And, you know, nobody's going to fund something like that.
Let's get the grid fixed first. Let's protect this country.
You know, you think I'll be the first one wanting to get to Mars. No, I'm the last one to go to Mars. Heck with that place. If I'm going to go anywhere, I'm going back to the moon. There's something happening up there. I'm not sure what, but there's something going on. And it's only 240,000 miles away. We can do that. And even budget-wise, we can do that.
Would you go to the moon if they wanted to take you?
Oh, absolutely. If nothing else, just to get up there and have somebody run me off, it'd be worth the trip.
I would go. I'd go to the moon. I would not go to Mars. It's too long a trip.
Right now.
Yeah.
We just do not have the technology for it.
I would send producer Tom to Mars, though.
Yeah.
Let's go next to Harry in Port Huron, Michigan. Hey, Harry, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, guys. Thank you for talking about this again tonight. David, if you guys are real serious about this, we can get this done in the next few days. We can get this done. We can put so much pressure. I've done this before. We can put so much pressure on those two. They're not going to know what hit them.
Let's do it.
Oh, I'm all for it.
So
jump on board.
What I want to do is tomorrow, Friday the 14th, Saturday the 15th.
Okay.
People, if you got printers, get your printers out, or if you need old typewriters, whatever. Get something out and write just a few words. Just say, pass the Shield Act. And I love what you said, David, about, hey, I'll do it for free. That's one of their excuses that they said it's going to cost. Well, if you're going to do it, it's not going to cost them.
No.
So let's.
I'll even bring my own food.
Yeah, let's get this done. And we can get 20 to 20 million people tonight listening, I think. So if we get 40 million letters, we can do that. If they don't have a printer, they can go to the library, and they have a printer. So what I want to do, David, is if Tom will take me off offline here for a second, I'm going to give him my number. You call me, and we'll get this done.
All right, we'll do that.
I will do that.
I will put you on hold, Harry, and Tom will get your information, and I'll have to tell him a little later during the break what it's all about because he's too busy taking other calls, but we will do that, indeed. It's an amazing, and David, how long have you been aboard with this?
I'm sorry.
How long have you been aboard this push for the Shield Act?
Just 3 months.
That's all?
That's all. I know, man.
Well, welcome to our side, then. We've been at it for 3 years.
Yeah, I can't handle that. That's got to be here's a timeline for you. If the Shield Act gets passed and we go to work, 2 years we will have the Shield Act done. The grid will completely hardened in 24 months.
Absolutely, and you know what? We would be so far ahead of other countries. I think Israel has shielded their grid, haven't they?
Oh, actually, I checked on other countries. They're just, you know, we're a leader. They're watching us. We ain't done crap. They haven't done crap. Nobody's done anything. I'll tell you something I would do. I would be building the shield. Once I get it really underway, I'd take a few days off, fly over to Russia and China, and I'd tell both of them, well, you see us building a grid over there, and we're hardening up. I will give you the technology so you can do the same. You know why? You don't want those two continent land masses on fire.
No.
You'll throw up enough smoke and ash, you'll blot out.
Oh, it'll come back and get us, too. David, we're going to come back and take some final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we're talking cinema symbolism, bizarre things that are happening in the movies. You're going to like that part of the program. And welcome back, our final segment with David Adair, as we talk about coronal mass ejections, EMPs, protecting our power grid. And we're going to do it, David. Doggone it. We're going to do it and get this wrapped up. We have to, for the sake of our kids, don't we?
Absolutely. If you don't, it's just a matter of time when that's not going to be here as a society. And it's not science fiction, y'all. This is fact. You can look it up. It's hard science. It's coming. It's just a matter of time. And we almost caught it on July 23rd, 2012.
Yeah.
Why those CMEs came so close and not hit us, that just beyond me.
Are you more concerned about a CME from the sun or an EMP from some rogue nation?
Actually, I'm equally concerned on both.
Are you?
Yeah, both of them.
And they both could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a matter of which one's going to get us first. And that's a heck of a position to be in. But we sent out them two letters, and we won't have to worry about either one.
Now, let me ask you a couple questions about the CMEs, first of all. do the countries that will lose their power, are they the ones that must be facing the sun at the time the CME hits, or does the entire planet get wiped out with a CME?
That's an excellent question, George. The entire planet. And what it does, the CME will strike, and the first thing they hit is the Van Allen radiation belt. Though the CME will split about in half, and the two halves will travel around the belt, and they collide again on the opposite side where they first contacted the belt. Then when they collide, they crash downward into the upper atmosphere. It's the ionosphere, the stratosphere, got mesosphere, then troposphere, and it'll cascade over the entire surface of the planet. Now, no CME has ever harmed any plant or animals. It only goes after power grids, electronics.
That's right. And, chips. What about computer chips? Fried?
If they're on and running, yeah, you're going to lose them. If they're shut off, it's possible they could survive a CME. However,
planes would drop from the sky.
Oh yes, they will.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, that's biblical. You know, like, rapture. I mean, ships will run up on the shores and docks and stuff. Well, actually, they won't run. They'll drift into the harbors, into things. But you're right about the planes. They'll not. The engines will just shut off and down they go.
Jeez. I've got the emails from some people in Canada. They want to know if Canada has insulated its grid. It has not.
No. I don't know of any country on the planet right now that has a hardened grid.
I thought Israel was working on it.
They might be. Yeah, I've heard that too. They might be working on it. But, you know, of all places, that's the best place for if you're going to be right in the Mideast, because there's no forest to burn.
That's right. Let's go back to the phones. Rick in Tacoma, Washington. Welcome to the program, Rick.
Well, hello, George.
Hey there.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Was thinking, we've been talking about this for, what, about 3 years or so?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the government, how the bureaucracy, the red tape, whatnot, we knock on one door and have to go knock on another. It's a revolving door that just comes to a dead zone. What about the private sector, getting in on this? I mean, corporations, billionaires. We have hundreds of billionaires in this nation. And if they can just contribute some, what would you say, like $2 to $3 billion to...
That's the initial projections that William Fortune had said was about $2 billion to insulate
the
grid.
Right, and that's chump change for America to put together.
That's right.
It really is. Outside of government, if the red tape isn't there, I think we need to go a different direction. You know? Just a thought.
The one percenters call me, and I'll go to work with them.
Yes, you will. And we got you Harry's information, did we not? Did Tom get it to you yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, he'll do that. And we will get it to you. And
I'd be glad to talk to one percenters. You know what? They'll die with us as well. They're not going to escape. They'll run in a bunker. It won't matter. You'll just walk out into a moon surface after everything's done. Society will be gone. The very reason they want to survive when they come out, that reason won't be there.
What happened to those missiles that were on that sugar ship?
As far as I know, right now they've been confiscated by our military.
Good.
And I guess they're going to either destroy them or they might be using them as a evidence to bring charges against North Korea. Because it's under sanctions. It's not supposed to be moving anything like that, period. It's already under sanctions by the United Nations, so they may use those missiles as evidence for the world court to move on North Korea. Like that'd make any difference to them. They've already been pretty much isolated from the rest of the world.
Let's go back to Long Island, New York. Joe's with us, east of the Rockies. Hi, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hey, David. I think the guy to talk to is Bezos from Amazon, and he could work with him. On the CMEs, I think we just need to repent, and that's all we can do about that. But I have two space questions. One would be, you know, you were talking about the distance of the moon being fixed at 200,000+. What's preventing the moon from just drifting out to space? And theoretically, if it wasn't there, what changes would we see?
Well, actually, it is leaving, Joe. It's moving by, what, about an inch or so every year, David?
Yeah. But I think it's 1.33 inch per year. And there's a lot of strange things about the moon, man. For one thing, it's too big for this planet to have captured in gravity. And one way to prove that is what we just said. With every year, it moves an inch and a half away from us. If you read up on it, you'll read at one time the moon was so close, it was only like 20,000 miles from us when it first...
God, it must have been heat. There's a full moon for you, right?
Yeah. I'm just saying, George, you step outside and look up, and then from horizon to horizon, it's nothing but moon.
No. Could you imagine the light that would emit from that from the sun? Boom, boom.
You wouldn't be able to sleep. You'd have to darken windows and hang
curtains. Yeah, it's like you'd have a flashbulb on at night.
It would. So when I actually read that and checked it out, and that's what the consensus is, that when it first showed up, and that right there shows you it didn't come from us. The consensus was that it was like 20,000 miles away, and they've been calculating an inch and a half, and by the time modern man shows up, it's out.
It's way out. Ten times that. What was your other question, Joey?
Yeah, I was asking about the original Concorde and SST. To me, was that more of a dangerous proposition than they made it out to be, given how fast they were flying, given how high they were flying, and how the oxygen was circulating, and if that wasn't going to work, then you'd be out of oxygen completely at that height as a passenger.
What do you know about those planes, David?
More than you think.
Uh-huh.
I sat in the cockpit of the Spirit of America. That was the first SST built by America. And people didn't even know we had one. We started it. And stupid politics came in and killed it, saying it'd be too noisy. Then France picked it up and designed Concorde. This is a true story. It's just crazy. I had a good friend. He died years ago. His name was Charlie Bell. Charlie Bell was a collector unimaginable of NASA equipment. I mean, he bought the entire Apollo program, basically, and housed it. You just look him up on the internet. It's incredible stories of things he would get hold of. And he was a PhD in electrical engineering with NASA for 30 years. But he would go down to a place of all names, Ransom Road, and they'd sell off the entire space program for lot numbers. And he'd take his money, buy up space, full-size spacecraft backups. He'd go inside and delicately remove precious metals. I came in his office one day, and he had something as big as a brick. It was kind of dull-looking gray, and he asked me if I knew what that was. I said, I think I know what it is, but I've got to be wrong. It looks like platinum. He goes, it is. He had a brick-sized solid lump of platinum, and that came out of the spacecraft. And he'd sell that and trade money, take the money, and go back down and keep buying stuff up. Well, one day he called me and said, David, I need some help. I said, what's the problem? He goes, well, somebody gave me something, but I'm going to need your help to get it out of the building. So we went over to this big hangar, and it's a church. And it's got the, you know, the cross out front and some glass windows in the front. But it's like a hangar that's been turned into a church. So we walk inside. I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. Sitting in this hangar is the Spirit of America, a full-blown SST, and the benches, the pulpits, they're under the wings. They're having a church under the wings of this thing. So Charlie said, we're going to have to knock that brick wall down back there, and we'll tow this thing out of here. It was sitting on its landing gears. And we did. We knocked the brick wall down, and we towed it out of there. And then Charlie had people re-brick the wall, and church was thrilled. And Charlie now has Spirit of America, the real one.
How about that?
Sitting on its landing gears. All you got to do is put fuel in it, and it's ready to fly.
Ready to go. And the Concorde, of course, that stopped after that tragic accident. 113 right. people died in that mishap. It hit something on the ground, blew a tire, and then blew up the fuel tank or something.
Yeah, it was a landing gear, and it ruptured, and it, you're right, it hit the fuel tank, and then it was just on fire, and then it just crashed on out. It couldn't get enough power to get up.
Sad.
And really sad, because that was really one of the prettiest aircrafts ever built in the world, yeah. and it flew so fine until that one accident. But as far as the thing with the Spirit of America, Charlie died. And when he died, scrappers came in and they scrapped the Spirit of America into little chunks, and it's gone.
Let's go to Jeff in Santa Rosa, California, on the Wild Card Line. Hi, Jeffrey. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Mr. Derry, it is always a pleasure to listen to your story. It's great. I have an answer for your handwritten letter to a senator or your representative in the House of Representatives and why they're so excited about it. One handwritten letter on a stamped envelope with a handwritten address on it is equal to 1,000 voters in the same area that have the same opinion, or in that area where the letter came from, that have the same opinion.
That's what they say? Wow.
Yeah, it's the highest amount that you can get is a handwritten letter statistically counts as 1,000 voters with the same opinion in that area. That's where they get
that the senators, they're scared of letters. They're really scared of them. And so I hope you people just drown them, man, because if you do, we're going to end up having the SHIELD Act pass, and I guess you all see me going to work.
That would be nice, coming back on the program, David, telling us the progress of insulating the grid, wouldn't it?
Well, I would gladly do that, but I'll do one step better. I'd be so transparent, I'd put a live feed channel so you guys can watch
it. We can watch it and link it up on Coast to Coast for everybody.
I would.
Let's go to Brian in Crestline, California. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, George. I worked with you a few years ago on the Unexplained Series pilot. Congratulations to your Gaia series.
You were one of the camera people.
The hammer people?
Camera people.
Yeah, I did jib cam for you.
Yeah, okay, great.
Hey, I just had a couple quick questions for your guest, David.
Sure.
First of all, cheers, amen. It's a good thing you got going. I'm full on board. Just two quick questions. Is David, you're probably familiar with the Starfish Prime test, high altitude test done back in the early 1950s. And as you know, those were thermonuclear tests. And the curious thing I had was, if a rogue nation that didn't have thermonuclear capability, they just had the smaller fission-type devices, how much damage do you think someone like North Korea could do EMP-wise with a much smaller device than what we know was detonated in the early 1950s?
They could do a lot of damage. Just a one-ton kilo device at 300 miles above us, dead center, would probably cripple the grid. Our grid is like a butterfly wing. It is so fragile. And, for gosh sakes, up on the Canada-New York border, they blew out a fuse about the size of my arm, but that caused a great blackout of New York City. And that was just one single fuse.
Yeah. How quickly after an EMP explosion does the grid start to go down? Instantly?
Instantly, at the speed of light.
Everything just goes.
Yeah, and what will happen... you know what a light bulb looks like when it blows out, right?
Yep,
you know,
yep.
Flash,
and then it darkens.
Every light, everywhere in all directions, flash like that, and then that's it. Everything goes dark.
Is there a popping sound? Will we hear something?
Yeah, you probably will. You'll hear a transformers exploding. That's going to be pretty nightmarish. And that's going to be like napalm going off, napalm bombs. You've heard transformers when they short out in electrical lightning storm. You know, tree hits the lines and transformers will get hot and back up and blow. That's a terrible sound. Well, imagine every transformer there is, all of them do it at one time. It's going to be deafening.
Does it scare you?
Yeah, it does. And I have no intention of surviving that. I just...
You know, hopefully I'm under a transformer when it goes off, because you don't want to be around when this thing goes. And that's the saddest part. A great deal of people won't be killed in the initial hit. Everything will go dark, and there'll be some, there'll be thousands killed instantly. Things falling on them, things crashing.
Well, let's say people in the hospital on pacemaker machines and things like that, or respirators.
They will survive a little while because, well, that's if the backup generators.
Yeah, but they won't last forever.
No, they won't. You're absolutely right. And they will lay there and die slowly.
David, as we wrap this up, give us a little information, your website, what people can do to help you out here.
Okay. You can go to my website, which is called Americas, that's with an S, AmericasFallFromSpace.com.
And we've got that linked up at Coast to Coast AM for everybody. And in terms of the campaign, folks, do a little research, but send a letter to Senator Lisa Murkowski or Congressman Greg Walden, and we'll post the information at coasttocoastam.com for you. David, thanks. Keep in touch with us, my friend.
I sure will. Next time I'll call you, I will have my biography done. It took us 10 years.
Oh, beautiful. We'll do that. And I might buy you a shirt, by the way.
You're too good, George.
Okay, my friend. Take care. David Adair. Up next, we're going to talk about cinema symbolism, more esoteric imagery in popular movies. You're going to like this next.